Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It certainly is time for Dear Science. As I was saying before, I've heard nothing but good things. I'm very excited. Permanent liquid magnets. What is it?
Well,
what are they?
Okay, so magnets are kind of important in everyday everything's pretty much. Anything that's got a screen on it or a keyboard or whatever, there'll be magnets in there somewhere. So, and normally we think of magnets as being solids because they are. I mean, everyone's familiar with the old bar magnets and stuff like that. And the reason that they, up until now, have to be solids is because in order to be magnetic, they've got to have one thing, and that is unpaired electrons. And those unpaired electrons have all got to be... Okay, we're getting into the heavy stuff pretty quickly. Okay. But these unpaired electrons in these molecules or whatever, they've all got to be pointing in the same direction.
Right.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you do that, then you've got yourself a magnetic field. These materials are called ferromagnetic materials, and this is why, for example, you can magnetize a piece of iron, because iron is a ferromagnet. If you get a permanent magnet, you know, you stroke the piece of iron.
I remember doing that. Last time I did science, I think.
And what you're doing there when you're rubbing your iron against your magnet, you're aligning all of the little electron spins in your iron, okay? And then once you take away that magnet, they stay there. And so now you've got a permanent magnet. Now, you can see how that's nice and easy in solids, because once, you know, they're solid, they stick in that same direction. Liquids, of course, are kind of random. You've got all sorts of random sorts of orientations in liquids. Now, what you can do is take molecules that have got unpaired electrons, stick them in a liquid, dissolve them or whatever, and then put a magnetic field across that liquid. And then these guys will align with the magnetic field. But when you take the magnetic field away, they go all random again, okay? Because they're not solid. Right, so these guys in China and the US and Japan, they've just published a paper in Science, which is the journal, and they've been really, really bloody clever. So what they've done, they've taken these things called magnetic nanoparticles, okay? So these are tiny little magnets, let's say. Tiny, about 20-odd nanometers across. 20 times 10 to the minus 9 of a meter. Absolutely minuscule. And these are tiny little magnetic particles, okay? And what they've then done is they've put these in basically water droplets, and then they've put the water droplets into oil. Mm-hmm. And this oil contains polymers, which are just big, 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 long molecules. And what these polymers do is that they sort of force the little magnetic nanoparticles to the outside of the water droplet, okay? So they're sort of hard up against the outside of the water droplet at the interface between the water and the oil. And then what you can do is you apply a magnetic field, and all those little magnetic nanoparticles then align with the magnetic field, and then... because they're so tightly packed together at the surface of your little droplet, when you take away the magnetic field, those puppies stay aligned.
Wow.
And so what you've got now are little droplets that are little magnets. And that is so
what is that? What are the repercussions? What can we do with this new...
Well, you can do anything with this new stuff now. So anything where you have, let's say, soft materials, okay? So magnets, as I say, they're in hard things, okay? We could put them now in soft things, okay? So, for example, you could have maybe, what's going to happen if you've got a soft material that's magnetic? As soon as you apply a magnetic field to it, that's going to change its shape, depending on the way that you apply that magnetic field. And so you could then induce, let's say, for example, movement, okay, simply by applying magnetic fields in particular directions. You could have little robots or something, for example, and you could tell them where to go just by changing the magnetic field. So, for example, you could put things into your body, for example, and you could tell it where to go simply by playing around with an external magnetic field. You would force these little things to go to particular places in your body, you know.
So this could be big.
Hell yes.
I can't comprehend it. My tiny mind.
I can't comprehend it. It just sounds like, so that's some Terminator 2 shit right there. What the hell?
Wow. So is it very much in the early stages, though?
It is, but you're right. I'm sure this is going to be really big. People have been trying to do sort of something like this for a long time, and this is really the first successful example of this. And, yeah, it's just going to remove the idea that magnets have got to be solids, okay, or let's say rigid solids, okay? So we could make them sort of bendy solids or whatever. Now we could make polymers, we can make magnetic polymeric materials that are just, you know, like rubber or easily moldable, you know, as we call them, soft materials. And like you can make magnetic sponges, for instance, or you could obviously have a magnet that would conform to the shape of anything. You just pour it into, you know, anything and bonf, you've got yourself a magnet of a particular shape. So it
sounds like the world as we know it and year 11 science will be changing big time. Now, storing data in music, what is it? How is it going to be used? What does it mean?
Yeah, this is weird. I sort of happened upon this while having a wee search and thought, good or bad. So so there's a couple of PhD students at ETH, which is the École Polytechnique. Oh, no, is it the École Polytechnique? It's in Switzerland anyway, okay? Oh. So one of the big universities in the world. And they found a way of actually storing or embedding data in music. And you might think, well, what's the point of that? And so the example that they used is, you know, you check into a hotel or something, you got the old background music going on, and wouldn't it be great if your phone could pick up data that's in the background music, like, for example, the Wi-Fi password, something like that, and you don't have to do anything.
Sounds scary.
It sounds a bit scary.
It's a bit like, you know, the whole how the Alexa is listening to you, and now the music's going to be listening to me too.
Well, and that's the weird thing. I can see that that's a good application of this. And the way that they were doing it, which I think is more the highlight of the article more than anything, is they very, very cleverly sort of figure out that, so they've got this music. They don't want to obviously diminish the quality of the music when they're putting their data in it. So what they've got is they figure out these dominant notes in the music. And then what they do is they add the data by just putting in another quieter note that's just at about the same pitch as that dominant note, just a little bit less and a little bit more. And that makes it inaudible to the human ear. So, you know, we can't hear it as being anything. But obviously your phone can deconvolute that and then, you know, figure out what the data is in the actual music. And that's the whole point of this. So there's similar sorts of things, like when you are driving along in your car and you know, the name of the song comes up on the radio or something like that when you're busy playing it. So that's a similar sort of data transmission thing, but that's transmitted through the FM spectrum, okay, in the same way as the actual signal is transmitted. This is incorporated in the music. This is actually taking the music and actually adding something to the music. And so I can see you're sort of the cogs going, and then you're thinking, oh geez, you know, this you could use this for horribly, horribly nefarious purposes, surely.
So I mean, so again, in its early stages, I imagine.
And
I guess we'll see.
I know, but you know, just think of the terrible things that you could do to, you know, if your phone is busy picking this up, you know, somebody could be telling you to do.
Couldn't
all
you
your,
put like
to,
viruses in the music?
I'm sure you could. It's, you know, sadly, you make an advance in technology, and the first thing that somebody tries to do is to bloody, you know, do bad things with it. And I could see all sorts of bad things with this. I could see obviously some good things as well, but I don't know. I think there's too much that could go wrong with this, I'd say. And it would all be totally, you know, you won't know the first thing about it.
Yeah.
All you'll hear is this bloody background music in the lift or something, and next second your bank account's gone or something. So
some of the things people get up to, it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yep.
And now my favorite topic, spicy food and dementia. Is it good? Now, first of all, I get a bit of a survey going on here. How are your spice levels? You like spicy food too?
I've had, at the time it was the hottest, I've had a Carolina Reaper, and it was okay. I mean, I only spewed two or three times, and it's much worse when it comes out the other side, so I wouldn't recommend it. But I like to think that I can handle spice pretty well.
Yeah. What about you, Alan?
Well, I've spent a little time in Hunan in China, and apparently in a lot of parts of China, in Sichuan, for example, they worry that their food is too hot. In Hunan, they worry that their food's not hot enough.
Oh, so you
so this gives you some idea of
I'm a mild curry kind of guy.
Mild butter chicken.
That's me.
It's a classic.
You can't beat it. But is it? Am I going to get dementia?
What's well, apparently not.
Here we go. It's one wanted to hear.
So, so this study, again, just been published by workers in Qatar, Australia, and the States. And so they did a longitudinal study of 4,852 Chinese adults aged over 55 over a period of 15 years. Okay, so, you know, they were testing their cognitive abilities, et cetera, over this period, asking them all about their diet, all of that sort of stuff. And then at the end of this, they, you know, crunched the numbers. And what they found was evidence of faster cognitive decline in those who ate over, get this, 50 grams of chili a day.
Jesus, that's a lot of... 50 I mean, I don't think I go through that in a year.
I know. That is a truckload of
so it's got to be a lot for it to have any...
Well, 30% of the participants ate over 50 grams of chili a day.
That's just... I mean, what, are you just having chilies for breakfast? is that possible?
And nothing else by the sound of it, Chase.
So... Yeah. So basically... Because I've always kind of been under this thing. I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, if you handle your spice and you have a bit of spice, it maybe keeps you sharp.
Well, there is, it's been shown, again, other studies, that chili is good. Apparently, it speeds up your metabolism. It's good for fat loss and it inhibits vascular disorders. So there's proven health benefits of chilies. But now these guys are coming along and saying, well, apparently it accelerates cognitive decline when you're getting older. So, okay, so if we look into this a little bit more detail. So what they're saying is also another finding that the memory decline was more marked if the person was slim, apparently. Mm-hmm. So... chilies keep you slim anyway in the first instance, apparently. Yeah,
especially if you're eating nothing but chilies.
And that memory decline was a self-reported poor memory. Okay.
So
now, there's...
That doesn't seem very scientific.
Well, oh geez, don't go there, because we'll get phone calls. But I have problems with this sort of thing. I have, and there are obvious problems with anything that's got to do with diet and the effect of particular parts of your diet on something, you know. And the obvious thing is that you can't do the control experiment. You obviously can't do everything absolutely equally. Everyone's going to be eating differently. Mm. Everyone's got different lifestyles. Everyone's, you know, got different everythings. How do you then account for all of those other possible variables in people's diets and then pin this cognitive decline down to that one thing of the fact that they eat over sort of 50 grams of chili a day sort of thing? I find that extraordinarily difficult. I'm sure the practitioners will argue statistics, probably, and say that, you know, this is all kosher and everything like that. I had a quick look at the data in this paper, and, you know, we had points on a graph and we had big fat error bars, and the error bars were busy overlapping each other, which what I know about statistics means that they are the same, but, you know, these guys are saying that there's a definite difference.
Only way to really do it would be you're born, you're stuck in a room, they monitor you, and you're 18 for the next 50 years, and that's the only way to get it, really.
And you have a twin as well that you put in another room. Yes, that's now that would be perfect. Okay, <You're> just, but I do think you'd have trouble with the ethics committee on that one.
Well,
I don't think they'd really pass that too well. So the guts of this is that they seem to have got some correlation between cognitive decline and the amount of spicy food that you eat. So obviously they end the paper, and this is a quote, the last sentence of the paper: further research is needed to test whether reducing chili intake can prevent cognitive decline.
And that kind of, that's a classic, isn't it?
It is
all evidence, but more
research is needed, as we often say on this program. More research is needed. And is it
You know? That's a classic in an exam.
I would stick to the mild butter chicken.
I think I'm safe there. Well, Alan, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
I think that brings us to the end of Dear Science for today. It has been truly a pleasure. What a great one. So, yeah, 50 grams of chilies.
I know.
That is wild.
Yes.
Here it is.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.